have a cooking show.
Chief, what have I told you about coming back to the show?
I wanted to rule the galaxy, but they wouldn't let me.
Who wouldn't let you?
Walt Disney Pictures.
Oh, well, I mean, they let you come back? Well, we don't really talk about that.
No, we really don't. But I at least got to make cameos and other things too.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to that another time, Sheev. Just go do stuff.
All right.
Now, normally Sheev Palpatine would be very welcome right now on Voices That Cook, but I just want to say this. You may think to yourself, it's been maybe a week since I last heard the show. Well, for me, it's been many weeks. I have been sick, I have finished a show, I have gone through Thanksgiving, and yeah, it was pretty busy and trying to get over all that good stuff. But guess what, everyone? I am back. I am back on Voices That Cook, and I am so thrilled to be back being a voice actor who enjoys cooking, and I get to talk to other voice actors who also enjoy cooking. Hello, I'm William Nunn, in case I haven't said that already. And I got to have a very, very good friend, very special guest on the show as well, and that is my other fellow voice actor who also likes to cook, and that is Scott Wilkins. Scott, good to have you on the show, my friend.
Splendid, splendid to have you. Not like the artificial sweetener. I am genuinely happy to be here.
Woohoo! And before we begin, I did want to give you guys a bit of an update, even though obviously this has been around for a while as of this recording and will be by the time this episode gets uploaded. But I did want to just go ahead and mention that before this episode was recorded, there was a point where I was, you know, saying over and over, like, I had finally recorded my demo. I'd finally was getting my website put together. It had finally happened. I finally have a demo now. I finally have a website. And you can actually go to williamnunnvo.com if you'd like to hear my character demo and see Spotify links for Voices That Cook and One Shot's D&D character podcast, a little bio about myself, and of course my resume. And if you would like to work with me in the future, feel free to see my email on the website and shoot me an email if you'd want to work with me sometime. That would be fun.
And it's such a pretty demo.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I like yours too.
Thank you.
Which I will say I have a bit of a bias. I have a bit of a bias on yours because there's quite a few bits in there that are from stuff that I have made.
Not one, not two, but three quips from it. Yes.
Yes, yes. So one of the things that made me friends with Scott was not only just we enjoy stuff like Dune and other fun things, but we've also worked together on multiple projects, and I've had him on One Shot's D&D Character Podcast. I've had him on the Davin Miscavige audio stage play, and I also had him on The Contrary with our mutual friend Crystal Olivera, which I would not have met her if it weren't for you, so thank you for introducing us.
My pleasure.
And also, of course, thank you for doing a wonderful job in all of the projects that you've been involved with me so far. And I'm sure we will work together again at some point.
I am so happy to be working with a fellow storyteller, Matt. Absolutely.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Just any opportunity, if somebody says to me, hey, I want you to be a part of my project, I'm there, man. I'm there. I just have to remember I can't do too many of them or I don't have time to pay the bills. But priorities, am I right?
Priorities. And also, it's a good thing to be able to, you know what's really important to you. And if you're working on something that you're really passionate about, that you really love, that will really showcase your awesomeness, but also you enjoy the people that you're working with, I think that's a good enough reason to do anything.
Amen.
So that's
amen,
definitely a good thing there. And it did let me want to ask, because I don't know if I've ever asked this question, and you may have told me this before, I'm not 100% certain, but do remind me, what got you started in voice acting?
That's okay. I'm not a terribly memorable person, so I probably told you and we both forgot.
Those are lies.
I know, blasphemy, blasphemy. Anyway, so to answer... this is the voices that cook, not the voices that squawk. So, anyway.
Hey, Demon Dorfy has been on the show, so weird silliness can happen on here.
Totally understood, totally understood. And apologies, I don't know if it's I don't always know if her name is Dorothy or Dorothy. Either one is good. I mean, I'm for equal representation of thees and fees. But anyway, that's not answering your question. Let's answer your question. What got me started into voice acting? Whew. Well, a lot of it stems from being a lifelong storyteller. I've been doing it since I was 5. My dad got an old 8088 IBM PC computer, and one of the first games that was on there, other than a Tom Clancy game, Red Storm Rising, was Heroes Quest, So You Want to Be a Hero. And that just fired up the imagination like nobody's business. Seeing the graphics, your hero just walking around, interacting with people in the town of Spielberg, and fighting monsters and brigands and goblins. It's just like, to a little kid, this was all just so amazing. In fact, it's the game that got me to learn how to read, because back then there were no talkies. It was all just... everything was text-based. I mean, you had those arcades that had the "Wars from Your Grave" stuff, but with PCs, not a thing. It was all just silent stuff. Just you had to read everything. But when they did become talkies, that was really amazing. But it just said, "I want to be able to tell my own story." In that same universe. In fact, when I was at school, we were given blank books and we could fill them out. We could type out the text and then draw the pictures. And there was my character in this second grade, maybe third grade book, Heroes Quest. And the hero's name was Killer, because what better name for a hero than Killer? He would dodge and put his shield up and avoid the brigand's javelin, stab him and kill him. And it's like, oh, I have a few pages left. I guess I'll just color it in. It's like search body, because he had to type in search body to loot the corpse. It's like my lucky day, the end. And just that desire to tell stories was there from the beginning. And then... We had a cassette player that you could push the two or three buttons and record. And my brother, sister, our neighbor, and me, we would have our Star Trek parody show, Star Wreck. That was just goofing around, parodying things, putting in weird commercial breaks. My sister did the doo-doo sort of thing, and putting your voice involved. I wasn't allowed to really participate because it was all ad-libbed, and they were faster ad-libbers than me. I was always slow on the draw, and I got pushed out, and I felt bad about it. However, every now and again, we would watch on TV behind the scenes of like Disney animated films, because that was pretty much all that was animated back then. It was Disney or nothing. But every now and again, we would see behind the scenes of people in the recording booth recording their lines. And every time I saw that, every time I saw an actor in front of a microphone just projecting and saying those lines, I was enthralled. It's like, I love that. I don't know what it is, but every time I see a microphone, every time I see somebody working in front of a microphone, I'm enraptured. And just eventually I was able to make those connections. And, well, my first career when I wanted, you know, when you're at that tender age of what I want to be when I grow up, the first thing I wanted to be, first thing I wanted to be was a computer game programmer, because then I could make my own video games and I could enjoy those games and share them with the world. But then when I found out how much math is involved with coding, I said, fuck that noise. I'm just going to be a computer game director, because they don't have to worry about the coding at all. None of the programming. They just boss people around. Do it that way. Do it this way. Do it that way. And then I realized I'm in the southern tier of New York. That is nowhere near Silicon Valley. I am never going to get into video game making. This was before apps and things were a thing. This was like in the late 80s, early 90s. So things were still restricted to arcade games and PC games and Nintendos, Super Nintendos, that sort of thing. Cell phones weren't a deal yet. So then I said, well, I'm getting into my teen years. I've got all these stories kicking around my head that I would love to make into video games someday, but that's not going to happen. So why don't I just write them out? So I'll be a writer. I want to be a paid, bona fide writer. And so I was writing a novel for a while. I made it about what I deemed was the halfway mark. But then I got into my early 20s. So it's like, did I really write this shit? I kind of scrapped it. I mean, I still am keeping the story, and I changed out why I was writing it as a manifesto of everything I've learned about the life, about life, the universe, and everything. Unfortunately, I've had a couple of paradigm shifts since then, so it's like, oh, man, I'm writing shit again. But at some point, in my long career of retail, as a cashier and or head cashier, I was thinking, maybe I could be a voice actor. I still love the idea. I'm in my 20s and early 30s. I'm still enraptured by the idea of getting into voice acting. And I'd been picking at that idea. But the problem with retail is that it's comfortable. If you're not, if you just want safety and just don't want to really, really tread the waters and splash at people, and just earn a paycheck every week, it's fine. It's not too bad. It's fine. It's fine.
It's safe. It's very safe.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's kind of, especially at some point, you deal with the bullshit that comes from retail with customers, bureaucracy, red tape, all that nonsense that's just like, that just really crushes your soul. I felt like I was, as a head cashier, I really felt like I was Judge Dredd, somebody that was putting up with a lot of garbage and have a really thankless job, but it's your job and you just do it the best you can. And it's like every day, I'm going to do my job, even if it sucks. But eventually,
this needs to be a thing, in all honesty, with Judge Dredd working at retail over at Mega City One, just seeing people buying stuff and whoever buys stuff, like they're fine. But anyone who is, maybe like they're going in to, check things out, and he just goes over and says, you've been eyeballing that for every single time you've come in here. Are you planning to steal it or purchase it? No, I'm planning to. Are you going to steal or purchase? I'm just thinking about it. Just seeing him just get like that. And then you have the chief judge just show up, just go like, Dredd, is everything all right down here? Everything's fine, sir. And then someone actually steals it. And he just goes, and someone just like, no, call the police. I am the law. Just shoots at whoever's trying to run with like a taser or something. But if they actually steal directly from the cash register, he's going to go full lethal. Yes. She's like high axe and they explode.
Clean up at register 5. And you're going to have people coming up with more elaborate and detailed ways to steal a drill. And it's going to be up to the law to shut down that elaborate chain of people trying to steal a sander. It's like, wow, I could see this happening. Yeah. Why don't I have my people call your people and we'll see about setting something up.
If you read enough Judge Dredd, you'll know. Don't ever call them. If they have to get involved, it's not going to be good for mostly everybody.
Amen. Yeah, I hear that. So, back to my life story, which hopefully isn't dragging out too long. Anyway, so eventually I'm so burned out. I make a couple of mistakes. They kick me out. They kick me out of retail. And it's depressing, the circumstances that it happened, how it happened, who did it, and all that spiel. I was ready to move on to another shit job until a family friend said to me, "Why don't you go back to school?" And thought, yeah, why not? Why not go back to school? So I talked to my wife about it. We looked at and worked out the logistics. I cashed in my 401k, which 13 years, about 12 years at that store after taxes and fees, left me with about 10 grand, got us through summer. That was nice. And then registered for school at my local community college. And I said I wanted to get into voice acting. It's like, yeah, our communications curriculum would cover just that. And first semester, I think they do all the good stuff first and then do the frivolous needed garbage at the end. Because by the end, I was just like, this is all boring shit. But that first semester, oh my gosh, my eyes opened up to the whole world of audio video storytelling. I thought that I was barred from that. And I thought that I had to go to Hollywood or New York or Florida or Ohio. Nope. To be a part of that.
Now, to anyone who's listening from Ohio, we like Ohio.
And so I had my financial aid overflow and we were doing announcing for radio and TV. And I said, I bet I could get my own gear. So I was watching a 10 Seconds video and he was telling about the gear he used, then he was using an Audio Technica AT2020. It's like, boy, he really does sound
good.
That's
what I use.
Like, yeah, right. So I thought, wow, why don't I check that out? I went on eBay and found a new one, a brand new one, still in the box for $50. And I was like, wow, I'm in. So I ordered it, went to Guitar Center and said, I want to be able to use this on my computers. Set me up with the gear, which wound up being way more expensive than I thought. But, well, you know, when you're just starting out, you don't really know how much you're going to be paying. But, hey, there you go. So got everything, got my gear. So while we were being taught these things, people were told, okay, you can go use the booth over there at the other side of the building and record your stuff and then turn it in. But I had my gear all set up, ready to go in my living room. So, hey.
And, there you go.
Right. I was able to help some of my classmates. It's like, why don't you come home with me? We'll work on your project together. And, oh, my gosh. How am I leagues ahead of some of these people? Because some people that I was working with, it's like, weren't you listening in school? Weren't you paying attention in class? Why am I the one that's teaching you this stuff? I don't know. I think, admittedly, some of it is my background in storytelling of just
true.
One of the things that primed me for this line of work is diction, being an enunciation. I learned back in my childhood that if you want to be taken seriously, if you want people to understand you, you have to enunciate, you have to speak clearly, you have to just, you can't do any shorthand that people aren't going to understand. So one of my one-ups that I had over a lot of my classmates was that I knew to project, to talk loudly, and, well, not too loud, but still project, and speak clearly so people can understand you. And that got me a huge step over a lot of my peers. And the video component of our studies, I was able to learn. I learned so much, and I got, and it just came to me so naturally. One of our class, several of our class projects, we had to do a lot of audio things, and our final project for audio editing was we had to take a scene from any movie, any show, whatever, and we had to dub over it. And one of our class assignments was doing the "What is your profession?" scene from 300. So I thought,
ooh,
yeah, that was so much fun. Fun fact, my class, like from 2 or 3 years prior, actually contributed to the sound, to the background vocals of The Dark Knight Rises.
Nice.
That chanting that you hear in the prison. They did a calling all cars kind of deal, and that people could contribute to that chanting. And my class, like I said, like 2 or 3 years before, contributed to that. So even though I wasn't a part of it, my school was, and hey, that's a nice little cool.
Fun fact. You want to know what the first submission I ever sent out involving anything voice related for any project in my life? The very first. Can you guess?
SpongeBob SquarePants application?
No.
I'll give you a hint.
I'll give you a hint. You were just talking about it.
Something Dark Knight related.
Yes. You were just talking about it. Like, literally, you gave away the answer yourself. I'll just a little quick history lesson. There was a point where Hans Zimmer was working with somebody. I don't remember exactly what the company's name was, but he wanted to hear fans submit their own audio of the chant that you hear throughout The Dark Knight Rises. The Desha Desha Basara Basara. You get to hear that chant throughout the movie. Yes. And I submitted. And this was back before I understood how microphones worked. This was back before I understood what MP3s and WAV files were and all that sort of stuff. I didn't really know it all too well. But I used to have sort of a wishful thinking mind that I had sent it out and they had just implemented my recording in there somewhere on top of the likely thousands that got submitted, and you can't tell I'm in there, but I'm somehow buried in there. And then I saw an article years later where he had mentioned that, like, he tried that, and I don't think it was going very well because there were people that had different setups for their microphones or the way that it was implemented, to where I feel like if it were all meant to be a collective that you would have from many different people from around the world sending in stuff with different kinds of recording equipment or different quality types of recording equipment, I should say, it was probably not the smartest thing to do at the time, though it was a fun effort probably on his part. So they likely, I think, went with just, you know, having people in a studio just doing that chant together. Which would be how I would probably want to do it, unless I was somehow able to, like, have everyone in the same spot doing something remotely like you can do this day and age. I don't know if you could have done that back in 2011. You could have. But, yeah, I did send in audio for the Bane chant from The Dark Knight Rises. That was the first – you could say that was probably rockin', my first ever audition, rockin', long before I even thought about being nice. An actor.
So when I got my gear,
as you were.
So, yeah, when I got my gear, just in lieu of what you're saying, well, first, when I sent before I left my retail job, I started doing freelance writing. So I was keeping my writing skills sharp, and that was another one of my high points in school was journalistic writing. And so because I was already writing with the inverted pyramid scheme, I knew how to write as a journalist. So that was a big one up. But then when I got my recording gear, my voice gear, when I got that, I started up a Fiverr account. And yeah, some recording gigs came to me, and I want to say the first thing that I got paid to do was to record for a very niche erotic story, just a guy-on-guy story. It wasn't written that great, but I'll tell you, I did the best I could. It was human man on merman sex. It was interesting.
What?
I'm not right. I know. Isn't it's
merman.
It was interesting.
Merman.
well they would turn into human like so you could have that guy on guy action. It was interesting. I'm not going to lie. I've actually looked
I am
for
sure.
it. It's like,
see if it
did
holds
you
up.
Ever do anything? Yeah, yeah. I don't even remember. I've even looked on my hard drive. It's like, is it still here? Either I haven't looked very hard, or I just deleted it because I had no use for it. It's nothing I would want to release to the airwaves. It's like, see what I did? Isn't this cringeworthy?
But Let me ask this question. Were you involved in a performance standpoint for that project, or were you just more of other stuff?
I was reading the audiobook. I just did
okay.
the narration.
Oh, you were narrating. Okay, you were narrating. Okay.
Yep.
So you were kind of you get to read. I'm just enjoying the thought of you reading erotica.
Hey, I've been a sexual creature since I was for a long time.
We'll just say that.
so I don't have a problem with and I love the craft. I love the craft so much. I'll do if I could afford it, good sir. I would do any project for free. If I had unlimited time, if I had unlimited resources, if somebody came to me and said, I want you to voice this, I'm right there. I love the craft. Just being in front of this microphone, when I got in front of my AT2020 for the first time and I saw those waves on Adobe Audition and heard myself back, the first thing I thought was, my voice sounds like shit. But once I got over that, that whole feeling, it's like, yes, I love this. And getting into my booth every time and just seeing everything ready to go, and I'm about to get paid to do what I love doing, it's such a delightful feeling. It's so hard to get over. I feel like it's one of those deals where it's like, you know. When you have your passion, when you're built to do something and you're doing it, you know it, you get it, you feel it.
That is when you know you are the Arnold Schwarzenegger of what you have become.
Amen, brother. Amen. Amen. That's not. And so I graduated from school, and I didn't even graduate from school. The radio station that I interned at, they said, hey, there's an opening. You want in? And I was like, sure, yeah. It's like, how do you say no to that?
I wouldn't.
And especially when this is the place that I interned at, I had been wanting to work there for decades. The CEO of the guy that runs the company, the radio station, had come into the retail store where I'd worked, and he'd hear me overhead, like the customer pickup at aisle two or whatever it was. He'd hear me overhead, and it's like, you got a really great voice. I'd love for you to work for me. So he would come in every now and again, and I'd ask about it, sent him emails, and he's like, well, we honestly don't have any place for someone with no experience nor training. Fair enough. I can respect that. Back then, I could respect it, and now even more so. Being in the industry, I totally understand that. So once I got that internship, I was like, this is amazing that I was finally a part of it, and the CEO saw me, excuse me, and he was like, hey, it's great to see you here finally. It's like, yeah. And then the previous board operator moved on to another job. So I got my name came up. It's like, how about that intern, Scott? And it's like, yeah, sure. So my former supervisor messaged me and it's like, you want in? And it's like, oh, yeah. So I got hired to work here part time and I've been here ever since.
There you go.
And I've learned so much about audio work in the time being, just from one of my coworkers who leaned me into one of the other DAWs, Reaper. And I've been using that ever since because I'm just not really in. As much as I like Audition as much as the next person. I just don't like the subscription because when you're not bringing in money from your voice work, that's an expense that just like, can I justify that? The answer is no.
No.
So Reaper is technically free. You can download it and then it just nags you. It's like, won't you buy me? Won't you buy me?
Please.
Won't you buy me?
Please,
finally,
buy
I said,
me.
Fine. I've been making enough money from the business that it's like, all right, fine. I'll shell out the $65. Here you go. Stop nagging me. And it doesn't nag me anymore. And plus, I feel more professional.
It's going to still nag you about download updates, though.
It does. It does. I don't disagree with that. But that's not
true.
A bad thing because they keep updating it. So it's like, so you know that they're not ignoring it.
True.
But I won't deny there are times when it's like, I don't have time for this nonsense and just say later.
Yes. And that's a nice thing. You can say later for that. I do have only one other question involving voice acting for you, since you've basically covered just about any topic I would have probably asked you, other than one. What is a role that you would love to have more than any?
I think you could glean from that just any. Just I love it. A good chunk of my bread and butter comes from narrations. There's a guy in Europe that has me do teaching English. Idioms and expressions. That's kind of where I make a little
bit
of my money. But I love character work. Yeah, yeah, it's really neat. And I met them through Fiverr, and it's like, you know, I don't really like having a deal with the fees and whatnot, so could we take this beyond Fiverr? It's like, yeah, sure. So they send me projects every now and again, like, yep. And so I record those, and there we go. Educational stuff and even some informative things. I've done some PUBG map tutorials. Those are kind of fun. But I think being the storyteller that I am, growing up from those computer games of amazing stories and fantasy adventures, King's Quest, and to a smaller degree, Space Quest, to an even lesser degree, Police Quest. You can tell the company that I grew up on, Sierra, because they were all about the quests. And so there were just those fantastic adventures. And I love the amazing characters that they were a part of. And now that I'm a part of this this really awesome community of lower tier voice actors, although I get to say hi to the higher tier ones from time to time. But I love being a part of it. And I love the characters that are brought about within this community. I love being the characters. I love just being those fictional people where you can just you can get lost into a role. It's just so amazing. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm sure it's completely false, but I feel like the narrations, the medical stuff, the informative stuff, that's where the money is. But for the fun stuff, that's where you get to the character stuff. Those don't pay as much. I know that's bullshit.
Depends. And, it really depends on the. It depends on the projects also. Like who you're working with and all that stuff.
Yeah. The stuff. Yeah, you got to stay with the paying projects, and eventually you just some people don't realize it, but luck plays a big hand in a lot of this.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Right place, right time. Somebody happens to hear your audition. It's like, well, you didn't work for this part. But I really would like, so down the road, it's like, oh yeah, I remember him. Let's hire him. That sort of thing. A lot of it is luck. And that's why I tell people it's okay to do the non-paying stuff. If you have the time, do some non-paying stuff because you never know when that will lead you to a career, to a role that you really want that does pay, and it's a passion job. And so don't sell a job short just because it doesn't have a dollar sign attached to
that,
it.
That I will agree with. Now, if you are someone who is strictly wanting to just stick with only paying gigs, I totally understand that. And if you only want to do non-paying work with your friends or anyone you trust or are really close with or whoever, that's also fine too. I know people have different perspectives on it, but it can be really amazing when something happens where you have no idea that it was going to go from point A to point B. This is kind of a different circumstance than what we were talking about, but I figured this would be worth mentioning. Speaking of the David Miscavige audio stage play, I had someone who I was really excited about having Callus. I had someone that was going to be playing Callus initially, and for reasons I don't want to touch on here, he could not play him anymore. And it was completely understandable. I was willing to look for someone else. And sometime after that, I had my one-shots recording session with Zach Elliott, who played Dan the Wizard Man on the show. And after we had finished and we had such an amazing time that I ended up asking him, like, I think you'd be great for Callus. Would you want to play Callus? Because in that episode, he got to meet David. So it would be great to have him involved in the project. And he understands a lot of aspects of that character. So I'm sure that was an offer he wasn't expecting at all. He was delighted. And it ended up being one of his favorite roles he's ever done, from what he's told me. And then next thing I know, many months later, he put my demo together. And I just, nice. You just never know where things are going to take you, where you think, okay, I'm going to make a stage play production that is, in a lot of ways, the presentation of the backstory of one of my Dungeons and Dragons characters. And it has led me to making these really insane opportunities while also befriending people that I never thought I would work with. I never thought I would work with Shanta Parashuraman, and I loved her when I heard her voice Miss Marvel in Graphic Audio's adaptation for the first two volumes of the series, the comic book series. And yeah, it's just you never know where things are going to lead and go to. And I didn't know if things were going to lead you and me into getting to this point in our friendship, and I think that's amazing. And I know that we're going to be doing other awesome stuff later on. So there's definitely the main thing I would say for anyone who might be thinking to themselves, like, if they're maybe not sure if they're in the right spot for it, if they're not sure if they're doing enough, just keep going. You don't have to go full speed ahead immediately. Just take your time, do what you love, learn what you can, and just keep going. And definitely have some friends there to root for you, because that will help so much.
That's one thing I've learned, is that it's totally, one of the key things to do is just to put yourself out there. Just don't be afraid to commit to anything. Just do something, whether it's your own little dubbing project or reading a poem, just something. Just get your name out there and make yourself known. That's a really important thing. And sooner or later, somebody's going to see you and you'll see them and you'll say, I want in on this. And you can develop a good rapport with a lot of great people. I barely remember how you and I got hooked up. I mean, I know who it is. Big shout out to Desiree Argentina.
Thank you, Des,
for that. And I don't know how you know her. I know how
I
know
knew
her, because she's from...
Oh, go ahead. I'll let you finish.
I know her because she was a fellow. She worked with some filmmakers in my local area. She would help with behind the scenes stuff and I think maybe writing. I'm not sure exactly what, but she showed up at some local community filmmaker meetings and and eventually she moved across the country and we stayed in touch. And I was a part of her Facebook group, and I know you were too, and that's how I met you. How you know her,
yep,
I don't know. I never asked.
I will tell you. So I used to review movies back in the day, and I don't anymore. I don't mind posting tweets of what I think of movies and such, but I used to make video reviews for my YouTube channel, which I have honestly since deleted those videos because I think that the quality for them really, 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 really sucks. And I just didn't feel like they weren't representing who I am, especially these days. So I wanted to essentially get rid of them. But there was this whole community of people who enjoyed reviewing movies and such. And I remember at one point looking into reviews, and I think I was looking at reviews, which, funny enough, we've got a new Spider-Man movie coming out tomorrow as of this recording. I actually saw Dez's review for The Amazing Spider-Man back in 2012. God, that was 9 years ago. I saw that video and I had messaged her or commented, I don't know, and I feel like that was when that all started, because I then added her on Facebook, I followed her group, and we would chat every now and then, and it was really, really fun to talk movies with her, but then also see how over time, her and her husband just go on these amazing adventures all the time, they're traveling to different parts of the world, and it just makes me want to go and see some of these places they've gone to, but also, if I ever want to travel outside of the United States, I know who to talk to first. It would be her to know what I would need to plan for, prepare, what should I look into before even thinking about going anywhere. And after a while, it led to her introducing me to you, and we would work together. And I don't know if it was some sort of group thing where she might have just selected, two people from her group to be friends and do stuff together to motivate one another. And she knew that you and I were getting into voiceovers, and we enjoyed storytelling and movies and all that. And it was a good selection from her. So Des, if you are listening to this, thank you.
The funny thing about that is that she asked if I said I could definitely use that peer supporter sort of thing to keep me in track. And she asked me, it's I know somebody that would be willing to do that. And would you be okay with that? And I had a fear of commitment at that point. It's oh no, that means I'm going to be put towards certain pressures and whatnot. And I said, I don't think so. And she's like, okay, that's fine. But what happens? You invite me to be your Jack Bauer, and we wind up being friends anyway, and I get you. Well, you were on your way to Dune on your own, but I was one of those people that was kind of prodding you along. It's like, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Wait till you get to that. Wait till you get to that. And yeah, you fulfilled my expectations in enjoying Dune as much as me, but I dare say you wound up transcending me, as they say in one of the books, you translate beyond me. So, so you're a rabid fan, and I'm just kind of a, yeah, I like it a lot. I like it a lot, but hey, that's fine. More power to you.
Thank you. And I am proud to be a Dune fan, and I am very proud of the fact that, I've gotten people into Dune, and I've gotten more people aware of it and wanting to see the movie, which in turn will hopefully make at least some of them want to actually go and check out the book, especially since, you know, there's going to be at least a wait till October 2023, till we can get part two. And I'm going to be watching the shit out of part one on Blu-ray when I get it next month, because I'm just going to be going through it over and over and wanting to see some scenes that I really love that were translated wonderfully onto screen. And I still can't believe that that movie exists and that it's the Blu-ray for it is almost here. January 11th, I think, is when it comes out. Yeah. So by the time this episode's out, I will have already had the Blu-ray already. Will it feature William? How many times have you seen it? Cool. I'm glad you've seen it that many times. And I'm sure you will see it more. But I'm just so thrilled about that. And it's one of those things where I can't help but feel like, you know how you can get really, really hyped up and excited about something, and that thing you were really hyped up for and really excited for, it 100% delivers, and you feel like all of the time and joy and word of mouth you have spread for this thing, it all actually paid off. That's rare in a lot of ways, to where it can be a bit more exciting, the build up for something, rather than when you're experiencing it. And for anyone who has phrasing going on right now while you are listening, A, haha, B, the experience of seeing Dune in IMAX was an experience I've talked about on the show before, but it was really something else. And if it ever comes back again, which I'm sure it will, to IMAX theaters, I highly suggest seeing it that way, because that's the way to see it. And I do think
that's how it was filmed, yeah.
And the main thing I usually tell people, as far as like what's the biggest difference you noticed between seeing it like that and seeing it at home while it was on HBO Max, and the biggest difference to me was, other than clarity, you have a much better idea of the details going on in the background, the foreground. It's obviously a bit more. And a smaller resolution, as far as like, it's not widescreen, so you can't really see that thing that the Baron is holding later on in the movie that I don't want to spoil for people in case they haven't seen it yet for some reason. But the thing that I remember very specifically that is completely different when you see it at home is when that ship is rising out of Caladan's ocean. And you hear the booming noise going on from the ship, and it's like, this is really cool to see when you see it at home. But both times I saw it in IMAX, my jaw was on the floor, because the scale works so well in IMAX for that scene. It feels like a different animal when you see it on such a huge screen.
I hear that
with such an amazing sound system.
I hear the voices also.
Yeah.
I hear the voice is really amazing too.
That was handled very well, to where like it sounded like it could have
It could have peaked with how powerful and loud it was, but it does not hurt the ears at all. It's just very strong and visceral with how much energy is being used to be able to make it seem as intimidating, but as perfect as Jessica was able to handle it. The way Paul was having trouble with it initially, there's definitely a difference with it. While also you can tell where it's coming from, there's these other undertones of other women that you hear within that power where it's like, yeah, this is clearly a power of the Bene Gesserit that's been used and perfected over many, many generations.
That's something that they don't really establish in any of the movies, just how they keep a lot of these powers a secret, that it looks like witchcraft, but it's really just their own science and biology that they've perfected. And I don't think they really capture that in any of the movies, but you get glimpses of it in Denis Villeneuve's rendition.
And I'm sure there'll be other things that might be a bit more cleared up on, maybe. Like, I know you and I have had discourses back and forth about Mentats and such, which I know Denis has said that he's going to explain Mentats in part two, which he should, especially if he's going to do Dune Messiah, that would be very important to have at least the general audience understand that concept. But I also look at part one as how would you do an adaptation of Dune that not only heavily focuses on Paul Atreides, but is also the first part of a Dune trilogy that's going to begin with part one and then part two and then end with Dune Messiah. And I feel like he made all the right choices of how to lead into that. And for anyone who knows Dune Messiah, yeah, I think you would agree with me too.
Good stuff. Good
very,
stuff.
Very, very good. So now I have to ask this question because obviously this is a Voices That Cook show. That is the show's name. So I've got to ask you, good sir, and maybe not a full play-by-play. I just want to know, what got you started with cooking?
The genesis of that, there's a recent catalyst, but the genesis of that would be scrambled eggs. When I was a kid, when I was a tyke, I was a picky eater. If people were having sauce, I had to have nothing to do with it. When we were making pasta, it had to be pasta and butter. Not a horrible combo, but still, it's very mundane. When mom was making pizza, I just had to have plain crust. Just a corner of crust. Just no sauce or cheese on it. That was a fucking picky
How
eater.
How dare you?
I would smack myself upside the head. Amen. Amen. It's just that my daughters have tried to pull that garbage. And it's like, nope. They may say, well, you're like that. I don't think they'll ever find out about my past until they're adults. When it comes to that, but it's like, nope, my mom just got tired of having to put up with it. It's like, yeah, whatever, you can have your plain stuff. So just weird stuff. If it looked nasty, I wanted nothing to do with it. The closest I got to real good nutrition other than the periodic apple was celery, filling the canyon of the celery with sugar. That was probably the healthiest route that I took, which isn't saying much. It's not, but and I own up to it. It's terrible, but it is. It is what it is. Anyway, so when I was staying, I had a close friend that I visited every weekend, and we got to talking about, you know, let's have some scrambled eggs for lunch, and picky ass me was like, no, I'm not that interested. It's like, well, try. Come on, just try. He talked me into it. It's like, okay, let's try scrambled eggs. So he scrambled up some eggs. I added some salt. Salt was added. And I thought this was pretty good. It's a good texture. It's a nice, it's a good chew to it. And the salt is a nice flavor. So I said, yeah, if I'm going to have eggs, I will have scrambled eggs. So every now and again, I made my own scrambled eggs. Just whip them up in the saucepan and just add salt and crumble it up on the plate. And boom, there you go. You got your scrambled eggs. And that was how it started with my cooking. But then I kind of took a nosedive with that over the years. Just working in retail, you eat out of the microwave. And by the way, make sure when you're going to have Easy Mac and you put it in the microwave and hit start, make sure you put water in the bowl first.
Yes.
So I didn't really do that much cooking. My mom wasn't really able to do much for us. The average meal was basically just rice and corn, baked French fries, usually overbaked French fries, and pasta. We didn't really have a lot to go on. I didn't even, we didn't do steaks. We did hamburgers sometimes, but no steaks, no thick things like that. I didn't even know what medium rare was. I just grew up with everything being gray. It's like, okay. So I had a very dull palate.
But when did it get better? When did that actually start to get to where you're like, I'm willing to do this more?
That stemmed from my wife's rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis. Mm. She would try to cook as best as she could. Sometimes you just can't afford to eat out. Sometimes you can't afford those microwave dinners. And sometimes just life is not meant for perpetual microwave dinners and chicken nuggets and fries and all that. So we tried to cook, but my wife wound up with rheumatoid arthritis, so she can't really handle those mechanical skills anymore to really cook anymore. So that fell on me. And then at some point I started watching Gordon Ramsay videos of all things, and not necessarily the Kitchen Nightmares or the Hotel Nightmares or anything, Hotel Hell. It was his actual recipes, the actual genuine things where he would show you in his kitchen how to make a good meal, just a fairly easy to accomplish meal. And oh my gosh. It comes back to the scrambled eggs, man.
Yes, the way he
does
scrambled eggs, that's how I do it, too. That's how I do it as well.
He showed how to make scrambled eggs, how he makes them, I should say. See, I would always add a little, just like a splash of milk, and then just kind of whip it in the saucepan until it, it starts to crumble and gelatinize or whatever it is eggs do. I'm not good eats. I'm not Alton Brown. I don't know the science. Don't give a rat's ass. I just know the end result. Mm. So anyway, so I'm watching the video, and indeed he doesn't put any milk in. He just puts in he puts in something later that I don't bother with. But anyway, he stirs it up, and then he takes it off the heat for a little while, just for a few seconds. And then he puts it on, and he treats it like a souffle. You just got to keep it moving. Then take it off the heat again, and then put it back on, and just this back and forthing. As others have said, you make love to the food. You keep attention to it. And it's just like, and so he adds the creme fraiche. I don't, because I don't keep creme fraiche in the house.
Same.
It just sounds too foreign to me that I'd have to go to Paris to get it, which I know isn't true, but all the same.
I'd love to try it with creme fraiche at some point, though.
Yeah, probably would be cool. But so I try it that way, and then I add the salt and the pepper at the end. And oh my gosh, it's the fluffiest, most beautiful scrambled eggs I've ever had. He keeps them wet, which to me says it's like, those aren't done. But, I mean, I guess they are. Whatever. I like having a little more substance to my eggs. A little drier. My wife likes her eggs a little more wet. She likes her eggs fried. But I looked up another recipe as to how to make fried eggs. And it's like, oh, okay, that's how you make those. So it kind of showed me that I could up my game. Then I watched another Gordon Ramsay video of him making steak and sauce. So I learned how to sear a steak and I learned about the whole medium rare thing. It's like, okay, I guess I get it. Though it took me a long time to convince myself, holy heavens, that red does not mean that it's undercooked. It's okay.
It's fine.
About that pink. It's okay to have the pink.
Medium rare is good.
Okay.
It is your friend. And you will devour it.
It's okay. You can eat it.
That was another Gordon Ramsay video that I enjoyed watching and learning from, especially in my early cooking days. But I didn't get to do his scrambled eggs until this year, and now I can't go back. I enjoy other renditions that my mom has done for scrambled eggs. But it is a difference. It's fluffy. And what's really fun to watch, especially when you know you're doing it right, is that you're constantly stirring. You're constantly stirring, whether they're in like a big pot or a little pot, whatever you can do to just stir them in the butter and then see them just transform into scrambled eggs. And once you start to see that they're all starting to turn into that, and you just keep going till you know that they look like scrambled eggs that you are dying to eat, then you put it on a plate, and here's what I do. I put salt and pepper on, and then parsley, and then I dip on some Frank's hot sauce. Beautiful.
Hot sauce,
full. Yes. Hot sauce goes wonderfully with eggs. He uses creme fraiche. I use Frank's hot sauce, but he does use parsley. Parsley is great with eggs. And if you have it without the hot sauce, it is great to have it like that. If you need to, let's say if your stomach needs to be calmed down for some reason, if you had something really, really spicy for lunch and you need a good dinner, that will be very good for your stomach. I think that has helped me before. And it just feels nice to eat it like that. It's one of those foods that just feels genuinely good to go down. Whereas the steak, you just kind of need to. I think the main thing that people don't do that they should do with a steak is you need to season both sides first. You need to make sure that it's seasoned and left out to sit at room temperature. And then you can start to do the cooking for it, and it will start to do more of what you want it to do, and it will look beautiful, and it will have that coloration that you crave. And just keep an eye on it, follow the directions, and it shouldn't be... steaks are really not that challenging, at least for me they're not. You just got to keep an eye on it. And that's usually a lot of ways with cooking. It's just make sure you're attentive and don't leave it behind, especially with scrambled eggs. If you need to cook it constantly, make sure you already have everything you need before you even start to put the butter in the pot and heating it up. Because you don't want to like leave that kitchen for more than a minute and just leaving those eggs to not be stirred so much. So just make sure that you're always doing that. Now, I do need to go ahead and ask you this question because I do have to go here in a bit. But I really want to make sure I ask you this question before we parted ways. What is your favorite recipe, my friend?
I think I have to split it between two things. My brother-in-law comes and visits once every month, give or take. And one of the things I always ask for are my quesadillas. I love making quesadillas. Normally, I like it when it's like a pulled pork with cheese and spices and whatnot. But thanks to my daughter, my older daughter, who for whatever reason chose to be a vegetarian, not going to judge. It's just kind of annoying when I'm living in a house full of meat eaters. But a veggie quesadilla which isn't really that much different. It's just sometimes I put in corn. I'd put in broccoli, but nobody really likes broccoli in the household. Fine, whatever. But just adding those spices, making everything ahead of time, just putting the veggies in, sometimes beans, and mixing, then putting it on the quesadilla, and having my quesadilla maker makes it even more fun. And those go over really well in my household. People are periodically saying, let's have quesadillas, because I guess they love my quesadillas. Like, okay, I like the quesadillas too. I like putting them together. I like watching over them, and that's great. The other thing that is a very recent one is a surprisingly basic but amazing dish, and it's what we Americans call Alfredo pasta. A lot of times.
I said yum because I love Alfredo pasta, especially with chicken and shrimp.
Yeah, it's such a basic, simple meal, but it's so versatile. You can add so much to it. I didn't really do much with Alfredo pasta growing up. One, being picky, and two, is just kind of okay when you're getting those packets of pre-made sauce powder and the pasta, and add the milk and butter and stir it, let it simmer for like 10 minutes, and there you go, you got your Alfredo pasta. It never really grabbed me, but I recently learned, thanks to another channel, Vincenzo's Plate, really amazing recipes, by the way. He teaches how to make Alfredo pasta. And he said that a lot of people add cream to it for whatever reason, milk or heavy cream. You don't need to. There's only three, other than the pasta, there's only three ingredients: the pasta water, butter, and cheese. And I learned with this recipe how important it is to use good quality ingredients. I always underestimated that, because growing up in a household of cheap butter at best, margarine at worst, always thinking, margarine is fine. But oh my gosh, you get real butter. I don't think I've ever used top of the line $50 thing of butter. I don't think I've ever done that. But just like a couple notches up, and it makes all the difference in the world. And this recipe is just so easy. Follow the instructions on the pasta box or container, like 10, 12, 14 minutes, whatever. And then and this was something I always did growing up, was rinsing the pasta. Never rinse the pasta, because you're losing an important part of what makes the pasta pasta. It's that starchiness in the water. You don't want to lose that. So what you do is you take the pasta, take it out of the water, put it into another pan. They're saying that you can put the pan on top of the water, the pot that has the water in it, and you just keep it on low, and the water steams and keeps it hot. You could just put it on low heat on the burner. But you put the pasta in, you put your butter in, you put your cheese in, and these days I'm using pecorino cheese. It's really good, and if it's aged longer, like about 24 months, it's super salty, but it's really good. It's packed full of flavor. And you mix them in, you add your pasta water just like a little at a time, and you just, as they say, you love it. You just show love to it. And eventually it turns into a cream sauce. And wow, it's just such an amazing, delicious flavor. And indeed, you can add shrimp to it. You can add chicken to it. You can add beef to it. My brother-in-law comes over, and we introduced it to him, and he said, this is restaurant quality. He would pay money to have this. And just, I got to tell you, when I first made that night, I wept. It moved me so much that I made something that was so appreciated. I put a lot of hard work into it. Admittedly, I didn't use pre-made pasta. I made the pasta myself, just using egg and flour.
Fantastic.
And now, this real quick lesson, if you're going to make your own pasta, make blessed sure you have a pasta maker or you're going to be spending a long time on it. I should have been done with that in 20 minutes. It took me 4 hours just to flatten it and smooth it out. To be fair, if I had experience with it, I'm sure I could have trimmed down the time and streamlined it better, but I had never made pasta before, so I wanted to make it right. I wanted to make it good, nice and thin, and stretched out. It's like, yeah, if I'm going to do that again, which I want to, I am not doing it again until I get a pasta maker. Although I am going to make gnocchi at some point, and that one you don't need a pasta maker for.
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah, lately I've been coming in late, and you know, I go out. My voice booth, my recording booth, is at the radio station where I work. It's a quid pro quo thing where I give them something, they let me use one of the offices for my recording space, and so when I get home, sometimes I'm home late. My wife's waiting for me. She hasn't had dinner yet for whatever reason. It's like, yeah, let's just make some pasta. So, like, I won't say no to that. So I just make a small batch of pasta from using pretty good quality pasta from Wegmans. That's they love their higher end stuff. So I'll get a small bag of pasta and just make up some pasta and do the butter and the cheese and mix it together. And we have a couple small bowls and it's absolutely delicious. I can't recommend it enough.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. There have not been many times I've nearly felt the need to tear up or actually tear up while eating something. But the two I've definitely done that for have been birria tacos and my fried chicken thighs.
Mm.
Those were pretty remarkable. And you know you have done a really good job with fried chicken when your brother will tell you, I would much rather try your fried chicken than your Roman pizza, which is saying a lot because the Roman pizza was pretty amazing. And I will hopefully make that for my brother while he's here for Christmas because he does need to try it. And I want to make it again because pizza is really fun to make. But the fried chicken thighs, I've talked about them on the show before, but damn, they're so good. Let them marinate overnight. They will be even better the next day. That's a very good thing that I wish I had known before when I was making fried chicken. But now it's like, yeah, I'm going to do that every time if I can. Mm. If not, at least let them marinate in the fridge for an hour at the very least. But the longer, the better. In fact, you could probably do the marinade for it when you get up in the morning. And then when you're home from work, that's when you can start to mix them with the flour and let them fry in the oil. And there you go. I would like to actually try that with chicken breasts at some point because it's been a while since I've made strips. Even though I think thighs are the best, juiciest parts of the chicken, I do like my chicken tenders very much. And I want to try the same thing with them and see how that will go. But I do want to also mention once more, Scott, I am so happy that you got to be on the show. Thank you so much for being on here. This has been really fun talking to you once again. And I hope that everyone who has listened to this episode is not only going to be inspired to make their own scrambled eggs and pasta, thanks to you, but also I hope that they will work with you at some point in the near future, which, if they would like to follow you, my good friend, where can they do so on the interwebs?
I have a little. Unlike my appearance on the D&D Characters podcast, I'm a little more ready this time. And yeah, normally I'm found on Twitter. Normally I'm on Facebook, but people have converted me these days, so now I'm on the whole Twitterverse thing. Thanks to people not unlike you. Actually, it is pretty much just you that I'm on Twitter for. Not to rub anyone's ego or anything. That's like, okay, if my one really good friend in voice acting is in Twitter and walking away from Facebook, I'll have little choice but to follow him. So, to answer your question,
yes, because Facebook sucks. Sorry, Facebook just sucks. Wacky.
Yeah, I won't lie. I don't really promote myself on Facebook because, yeah, I think just old
it's
people
are on Facebook. It's impossible
to. Yeah.
It is impossible to promote yourself unless you have, like, whatever you're promoting is going to be directly on Facebook. Like, if you have a video, it has to be uploaded as a video that you can watch only on Facebook right there at that moment, rather than, like, a link to YouTube or a link to somewhere else on the internet. If it's not specifically only meant for Facebook, like, you only just upload your video onto Facebook, then it's not going to want to be shown anywhere else. And yeah. I've shown so much content on Facebook and hardly anyone would watch it or get into it or learn about anything with it. It's like, okay, there's clearly no point in me sticking around with this. And I have no regrets getting rid of Facebook. I feel like I have much more sanity in my life now that it is gone. But anywho, can my listeners follow you, my friend?
Well, let's see. So with Twitter, you can find me. I'm at CitrusGuy58. That's cool. That's good. And then on Instagram, you can find me as CitrusGuyVA. That's capital C, capital G, capital VA, capital V, capital VA, capital A. Stumbled that one, but whatevs, as the kids say. And interestingly, while I haven't done much with it lately, you can find me on TikTok as well. Turns out that's a fun place for us voice actors to kind of just do small little projects that are kind of fun. Let's see. That one, because I haven't logged in a while, that one I do have to look up. And hey, wouldn't you know it, I'm at CitrusVA. So you can find me there too. Fun little projects and tongue twisters, that sort of deal. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Indeed. Indeed. And I do not have a TikTok. Maybe I should. I technically do, but I have not used it. I've only used it maybe once or twice. Maybe I'll go back to it. I don't know. Maybe I will in 2022. Who knows? But if you want to follow me on anywhere that definitely exists, please do follow me on Twitter at Voice That Cooks and on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks. And please do follow those so you can keep up with all information involving Voices That Cook. And please do follow the show and do let us know what you think of our recipes and our fun times. And yeah, this was a very fun episode. I'm glad I got to have you on here, Scott. And I guess if there's anything else I could say right now, it's just, if you haven't seen Dune yet, please go watch it. It's probably on Blu-ray as of this recording, and you won't regret your purchase, I swear. You will be very happy.
I'm fairly sure that eventually you're going to be changing this podcast to Voices That Dune and Cook.
No, the only reason why I have it is because there's already so many Dune podcasts out there that I would have to make it stand out somehow if I were to do that. Because there's no point just being the other nerd who loves Dune. Like, what can I do to stand out, please? That's the only thing I can think of to make myself even remotely willing to do a Dune podcast, which
then you,
I would
then
love
you do
to.
The,
I absolutely
you do this,
would.
Sir. Go 3 podcast episodes without bringing up Dune once, like it's not even a thing. You have the Blu-ray in your hand, and you really want to talk about it, but you don't talk about it, because it's like, this is not a Dune podcast. This is not a Dune podcast.
I am going to decline that challenge.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It wasn't an order.
I love Dune
I'm not
too
doing,
much.
I'm not
I don't
using the voice.
Care. Yeah, your powers won't work on me. Try that again. You'll go to that place you dare not look. You'll find me staring back at you.
You mustn't speak of that.
Silence.
I remember your Gom Jabbar. Now you shall remember mine. I can have you killed with a word. And if you understand that reference,
yes,
then you probably didn't read the book. You watched the movie. Read the book.
Yes, read the book. And I can't wait for Dervish Chalamet to do that scene. All right, yes. Then. For all goodnesses and loves and foods and everything, thank you so much for listening to Voices That Cook. have a wonderful night, and go see Doom.
And scene!